Hello, and welcome to Advisory Explained. I'm your host, Kwesi Kretzinger. Join me in this series, this podcast where we discuss the complex world of advisory. We dive deep into very specific topics in the world of mergers and acquisitions, due diligence, tax, fiduciary services, and so much more, where we take complex topics and we break them down into smaller, bite-sized, palatable portions for you to understand and to understand where we can assist you. Hello and welcome back to Advisory Explained. I'm your host, Kwesi Kretzinger, and today I have the privilege to have Elizabeth Fick, the head of the tax and fiduciary team at Investec, joining me today to discuss a very prevalent issue on exit tax. If you leave the country, what does SARS want from you? And what does SARB require from you to get your funds and your cash out of the country? Elizabeth, it's good to have you on the conversation today.
Thanks for having me. And Kwesi, I just have to add that when I'm in trouble, people call me Elizabeth.
Is it?
Otherwise, it's just Liz or Lizzie.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, cool.
My full name is Jacobus and my parents the same. So if okay, I'm in trouble, I'm Jacobus.
I'm going to stick with Kwesi.
There we go. So I think first question is, can you explain exit tax? What is it? How does it work? Sort of where does it fit into this whole sphere?
Yeah. So, Chris, it's a good question, and a lot of people are actually quite scared of the word exit tax because they think it's some kind of additional tax or some additional charge that's going to be levied on them. And as you will know, that was like that previously, but there's been quite a lot of development in that regard. And what an exit tax essentially is where SARS says, okay, right, you've been living in this country, you've been building up wealth, you've been accumulating wealth here. You are now getting on the plane and you are leaving. I call it the ultimate breakup. You're breaking up with SARS.
Yeah.
And they say, not so easy. All the wealth you accumulated whilst you were living in this country, we had a right to tax and we want to make sure we tax you. So they created this fictional tax event and it's actually just a deemed disposal on your worldwide assets. So what they do is the day before you leave, they deem you to have disposed of all of your assets on a worldwide basis, and then they include it in your tax return as capital gain, and you'll pay CGT on that or capital gains tax on the growth if there is actually growth, which is important because a lot of people think that they're always going to be in for something when you cease tax residency, but that's not necessarily the case because you may be holding lots of liquid assets or cash assets, and then this exit charge actually has no effect on you.
Absolutely. And if I remember correct, and you can please assist me, but there's a few assets that's actually excluded as well, things like cash, fixed property, anything else?
Yeah. So how I always remember what is excluded from an exit tax perspective is if SARS are going to retain the taxing rights over those assets, there will likely be an exemption or they will likely be excluded from this exit charge. The reason being is because they have got their clause in you regardless of whether you are resident or non-resident. So think of things like 8C instruments, restricted equity instruments, immovable property in South Africa, personal use assets, which there's usually not much gain on, they're excluded in any event, cash. Cash wouldn't be subject to it. So generally, those are the type of assets that we see that are excluded from an exit charge.
And when is this exit tax due? Now, I know this is a vague question or a uncomfortable question necessarily for people to answer sometimes because there's a lot of question marks around it.
Yeah. So it's quite weird because ceasing tax residency is something that can actually only happen once you've got on the plane and you've left the country. However, for various complicated tax reasons, SARS deems you to have disposed of your assets actually the day before you leave. So you deem to have disposed of your assets the day before you leave. So this exit charge and this deemed disposal is actually calculated the day before you actually get on the airplane. And there's various technical tax reasons for it. So the payment thereof is slightly more complicated, and this is probably where the biggest complication comes in with calculating, well, not necessarily calculating your exit charge, but knowing when to actually pay it. But the deemed disposal is the day before you cease tax residency, and that's why it's important that you do all this planning before you actually get on the plane, even though the process starts after you've left. The formal process starts after you've left. The exit charge is the day before, and you need to have your valuations and your exit charge calculation done before you actually get on the airplane.
Absolutely. But that does open up the big question about liquidity, because in South Africa, there's a lot of people with quite high private assets in private companies, etc., which is not necessarily that liquid to get rid of, to sell, to pay this significant exit charge.
Yeah.
So how do you guys deal with that? How do you approach that liquidity issue?
Yeah, Kwesi, it's quite a tricky question to answer, and it's a good question that you ask because it's a very real one that we see for especially our entrepreneurs that don't have liquid assets. When you've got liquid assets, it's pretty easy. You do the calculation, you've got the liquidity to pay the tax, and you make the payment. However, when you have immovable property portfolios situated not in South Africa, because as we mentioned, those are one of the assets that are excluded.
Correct.
But immovable property portfolios sitting offshore, or you've got unlisted investments, so investments into your own business, you may actually end up in a position where you've got exit charge to do, but you don't have the cash and the liquidity to pay it. And unfortunately, SARS isn't very sympathetic with you in that regard. So you really have two options. Either you don't go anywhere, or you can come to an institution like us, a bank, and you can ask if you can borrow some money. However, we have done it on occasion. And a lot of clients do gear up against their assets so that they can actually settle this big tax event that you're going to be in for. But I would strongly advise that you proceed with caution, because it is risky to gear up on an asset and to borrow money for a fictional tax event. As you mentioned earlier, it's a dry tax. So it's not actually matching with liquidity, which comes with a significant risk. And also, you're paying a tax on an event that hasn't happened. So if that asset devalues and you've got the gearing, you've essentially paid tax on the higher number. So it is a problem, and it's something that a lot of our entrepreneurs struggle with. So you do need to do some planning to see how you can get around it potentially. And there are solutions.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big things that you just mentioned is planning. If you do want to exit, if you want to leave the country, try and stagger your moving or plan it close to a liquidity event, because the fact is you need cash to be able to move.
Yeah.
To handle these type of transactions, especially, and as we're going to jump over into the next question where we split into two types of people with more than 10 million and less than 10 million, the fact is there's a liquidity event that you will need to be able to handle. And it's not necessarily asset heavy people that are able to move.
Yes. A lot of people, and again, this is where planning becomes really important, because it's things you have to think of before you actually get onto the plane. And we often have people that come to us after the fact and tell us that they've now sitting with this exit charge and they don't know how to pay for it. And, you know, we have to then look at solutions like, did you really cease residency? Can we keep you tax resident in South Africa? But that opens up a whole nother can of worms. So it is really important and something that you need to consider.
Absolutely. When we jump into the next question, so the physical process, the step-by-step process for SARS and for SAR, because you want to actually get your cash out of the country, so you need Reserve Bank approval. Could you take us high level through the process? And we spoke earlier about the two type of people. You get the more than 10 million and the less than 10 million people. How would their processes differ as well?
Yeah. So there's always two parts to an immigration. There's the tax side of things, and then there's the exchange control side of things. And the tax process is pretty similar for both the more and less than 10 million. Where the difference comes in is once you have gone through the tax process, you then need to externalize your assets. And if you have more than 10 million rand, you need to do a Reserve Bank approval. So to quickly go into a little bit of detail on the SARS side of things, essentially what will happen is it's a process that you file on e-filing. And it starts with a confirmation of non-residency. So as I mentioned, you need to do your exit tax calculation before you leave. And maybe we're going to a little bit later get into the detail of when you actually have to pay those taxes because that becomes quite relevant. But you need to do your exit tax calculation before you leave. And then you're going to actually get onto the plane and you are going to leave. Once that process has happened, you're then going to log onto your e-filing and you're going to get a confirmation or you're going to request confirmation that you are in fact a non-resident from SARS.
Yep.
Now that's a process that you do, as I mentioned, on e-filing, and you're going to have to complete a certain form, the RAV01 form, and you're going to, with that, have to submit a couple of supporting documents. Number one is a declaration that is another form that's online that you'll complete that you are non-resident and the basis for which you say you're non-resident. You have to write your breakup letter, as I like to call it, or your motivation letter of why you are no longer tax resident. And that's something I really advise clients to write in plain and simple language. Don't make it too much of a legal document. And basically, you have to tell your story.
Yeah.
So you have to prove the fact that you are no longer tax resident in South Africa. So, you know, for example, you need to tell them where your kids are now going to be going to school, the fact that you've got the right to live in a certain country, where you're going to be going, are your assets going to be going with you, what job are you going to do, et cetera, et cetera. So the more detail you can put in there about your actual life, your gym memberships, your friends, et cetera, the better. And then you're also going to have to include all your supporting documents. And that is where we say your right to reside in the country, so a visa, a passport, et cetera, all your supporting documents. And SARS, in certain instances, depending on the profile of the taxpayer, at that stage may actually ask for confirmation that your exit tax has actually been paid and do an audit of your balance sheet and your last 3 years of balance sheet with supporting valuations. So that process is slightly different, and I, in my experience, I found it is largely dependent on the profile of the taxpayer. What then will happen is once SARS is happy and reviewed all of this and all these documents, they will then issue you with a confirmation of non-residency.
Mm.
Once you have that document, you submit it to your bank, and your accounts are going to change from resident to immigrant accounts. Okay, so that's the first part of the process.
Yeah.
So it's quite a process.
It is a process.
Now you want to get your assets offshore. That is the normal tax clearance process that you will follow. So you're going to apply for an approved international transfer tax clearance certificate, an AIT certificate. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a process that you do on e-filing and SARS. On the website, there's a list of documents that they need. Again, it's on e-filing and they will audit you. They will do a verification at this stage. Again, they will definitely ask for, if they haven't already, confirmation of the exit taxes that have been paid, your balance sheet, all the supporting documents. Once they're happy, they issue you with a tax clearance certificate. And then you now have permission to externalize assets. So you've got your certificate of non-residency.
Yeah.
Your accounts have changed to immigrant accounts. And you have your tax clearance certificate so funds can go offshore. And if it's less than 10 million, your bank or your authorized dealer can just do this for you. If it's more than 10 million, you have to do a Reserve Bank application.
Yeah.
And essentially, to the Reserve Bank, you give them the whole SARS pack, and along with your tax clearance certificate and your confirmation of non-residency. And a couple of weeks later, they will come back and say, shup, your funds can go offshore and your assets can actually flow. So there's sometimes a little bit of a delay from a liquidity perspective, because this process can take a good couple of months.
Yeah.
So we always advise clients to make sure that you've got enough liquidity offshore before you start this process and before you actually get on the plane. Otherwise, you can have your assets stuck in South Africa, which is another issue a lot of people face.
Absolutely. And I think liquidity is one of the biggest reasons that people either, well, walk away from the decision sometimes to say, listen, well, we can't go. And it's not necessarily just because of a weak rand to go and pay for food and housing in the US or in Australia.
The cost of living there, yes.
The cost of living that side is ridiculous. Yep. But that's not necessarily the liquidity problem for most people. It's purely the ability to take your funds offshore to go over at the end of the day.
Yes.
But I think what you did very well, and I really appreciate the detail, is explaining the process. And I think for a lot of people, they see, okay, immigration, we're going to go to Australia, got a new job, pack my bags, and we're off.
Yeah.
And for most people, that could work for the run-of-the-mill white-collar individuals. That could work. But if you start moving into the high-net-worth individual framework, and if you are on SARS's radar, then it's significantly more difficult to exit, and especially to get your cash out of the country.
Yeah. And, you know, if you are going through this exit process, doing it retrospectively is going to actually just cost you so much more money. So as you say, if certain people, they can just get on the plane if you don't have much exit tax, or if there's no deemed disposal, if there's no gain on your assets, it's a little bit easier. And if you don't have much to take with you, you know, then you might be able to just get on the plane and go. But as you mentioned, if you're a high net worth individual, you need to get assets offshore. You have to do your planning. Otherwise, you're going to have to do this all retrospectively, which is something that's possible. And a lot of our clients do it where they haven't followed the right process. But you could end up having to do a VDP with SARS. Now, I don't know when last you've been through a VDP process, but it's not fun.
No.
And I wouldn't advise it for anyone to have to go through it. And so because you're then going to have to backdate your exit taxes, and there will be penalties and interest potentially, so something we don't advise.
No, VDP is always the last option. It's really an uncomfortable position to go in.
Yes.
We actually just did a due diligence podcast as well, and we joked around before it, and it almost feels like, for most people, due diligence, but I feel like VDP is a lot the same, where you go stand in your underwear in front of someone, and they look at you, and you go, that's what you are. And it's just uncomfortable. So let's rather stay away from a VDP.
Yes, definitely.
What I've experienced is SARS looks, and you gave fantastic examples of documents that we need to get ready for SARS audit for cessation of residency.
Mm.
What I've experienced is SARS actually looks at your social media. We had a specific client where we had to do a we planned it, luckily, in advance to do a full exit braai, cheers to the exit braai, on Facebook, posted with photos and everything before they moved offshore to prove, listen, we've actually left. And SARS looked at it, and we used that as evidence to be able to show, listen, they really left. They said goodbye and left, even though other things didn't necessarily look like they left. That was the sort of the second shoe that fell, that they actually did leave. They said goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of that breakup letter that I spoke about that you've got to write to SARS.
Mm.
They want all the juicy details. And the more human and the more real you can make it, the more meaningful it is. So I'm definitely going to steal that for you. I'm going to tell my clients to have a goodbye braai, and hopefully I'll get invited and
Absolutely.
Bring the wine.
Yeah.
But it's a good point. So the things that I've seen SARS also really looking at, apart from the softer stuff, is your right to live in that country.
Mm.
And if you don't have that, it's a really hard argument. And SARS says, well, how, if you're telling us you're leaving this country and you're going to the next one, what gives you the right to live there and reside there permanently?
Mm.
Do you have an income there? So what job are you going to be getting? Are your assets going to be going with you? A one-way plane ticket always also goes a long way. And it's nice to have a set date, and your whole story can circle around that date to say, this is the date I got on the plane, which is why my exit charge calculation was done the day before. And you can motivate it with your goodbye braai, with your one-way plane ticket, with your right to live there, with your job on the other side, et cetera, et cetera. So you really have to tell the whole story. And this is where, even though, and I mentioned it right at the beginning, The process only starts once you've left, the formal process with SARS, once you're actually on the plane. Like, you can't cease residency if you're still here.
Exactly.
The planning has to actually start long in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On the other side of this is you have left. Now what?
Mm.
Now you still have a South African trust, possibly. You have family still in South Africa. So there's a lot of other things now to consider after you've left. So I think the first thing to touch on is there any mitigation that a DTA could possibly give you, either on your exit tax or other taxes? Is there any comments that you can lift out, especially on that?
So, Kwesi, I spent 3 long years doing my thesis on exactly this, whether a DTA could give you relief from exit tax. And I won't bore you for 3 long years. We have 3 seconds. And the answer is no. Unfortunately, a DTA does not mitigate exit taxes. But what it will do going forward is mitigate any assets which may remain in South Africa. And when you arrive in your new country, allocate taxing rights. So not so much relief from an exit tax perspective, but definitely for ongoing future taxes. Because once you've left South Africa, if you still have South African sourced income, so if you've still got property that you're renting out, for example, interest that you're earning in South Africa, you may still very well be subject to tax in South Africa. So still be a taxpayer here, even though as a non-resident, and the DTA will help mitigate that. In some instances, and with some careful planning though, DTAs may actually take away taxing rights, which South Africa may have over certain South African assets. So again, this is where the planning comes in. Pension funds, for example, and SARS has actually acknowledged this as an issue which they currently have. Some DTAs takes the taxing rights away from SARS and gives it to the new country of residence. And that new country of residence might not actually tax.
Yeah.
So there's a nice little loophole there. So it's always important to consider them.
Mm.
But as I said, for exit tax, fortunately, if you're in, you're in.
Absolutely. And I think it's a topic for a different day, but all these offshore wrapper funds and how do you start planning these exits?
Yes.
Efficient and effective ways to set up structures, to set up your insurance, etc. Because there's a lot of ways you can externalize funds. And I think a strong topic that we can also maybe discuss next time is the new ruling on crypto assets.
Yes. What's going on there, y'all?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting world that we're living in. In terms of retirement annuities and your retirement funds. So currently, if you leave the country, you've got this 3-year rule.
Mm.
Is there any way we can shorten that?
So, yes and no. As we love saying in tax, it's complicated,
yeah.
As you know. It's our favorite word. But this is really complicated. So, in certain instances, there is some planning that you can do. And I'm sure you are aware, but there was the change in our retirement system to the two-pot system.
Correct, yeah.
And you get your vested portion, which is you can access. And you've got access to a lump sum, and then you have your unvested portion of your retirement, which will now be broken into two pots, a saving pot and then an unvested pot. Now that, unfortunately, your saving pot you'll have access to. Your vested pot, you in for 3 years, jy moet maar wag.
Yeah.
And your unvested pot, in certain instances, if you haven't accessed your once-off withdrawal, you may be able to access that. If you have already used it, unfortunately, you would need to wait for your 3-year period. Retirement annuities, once you're in for 3 years. Unfortunately, there's nothing that you can do there.
Mm.
A living annuity, you also can't get out via a lump sum at all. Once you're in a living annuity, you're in it. But what you can do, and some of our clients do that, they actually increase their maximum withdrawals, which I think is currently sitting at about 17.5%.
Mm.
So they increase it to maximum drawdown and they deplete it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
But on that point, this is one of the particular asset classes which planning can be done, because the DTAs do sometimes take taxing rights away from SARS. And as I mentioned earlier, your new country might not actually tax it. So sometimes you're very happy to to leave it in that pension product and actually only start withdrawing once you are resident in the other country. And that you'll have to assess on a case-by-case basis. And it is something SARS have acknowledged and said there are a way of this issue and the semi little loophole that does exist.
Absolutely. And just for the viewers, we're not saying do treaty shopping and go find a country where you can move to extract your funds.
No.
It's not what we're saying at all. It's just something to consider 100%. when you move to a specific country. And that actually falls very directly into my next question. We have a few favorites as expat countries, the Australias, the Netherlands, the UAE, the USA. Mm-hmm. There's all of these countries that South Africans like to move to, and these countries really like us in general. Mm. I'm not going to touch on the topic of moving to the US under a specific flag or a specific motive, but a lot of people like moving to the US. But what if I have a South African trust, either an old family trust that has wealth in, that still gets income, that gets capital, that's distributed to me, or it's something that I created before I left? How do these new countries, and we don't necessarily have to go into these countries specifically, but just the consideration of the country that you move to, treat South African trusts, capital and income distributions?
Yeah. So a lot of people walk into my office and this is the exact, probably where a lot of the planning goes around is you have to look at the trust and you start in South Africa. So the issues, unfortunately, it is the issues. The issues start in South Africa and then move offshore. So if we start in SA, when you have a family trust, and often the parents are still living here, but maybe it's the kids that have gone to go live overseas. And distributions are being made to these family members. So in South Africa, I'm sure you are familiar with the conduit principle. But for our listeners, the conduit principle is essentially where distributions made from trusts are either taxed in the trusts or in the hands of the individual. Now, we only have that luxury if the individuals are South African resident.
Yeah.
If they are not resident in South Africa, that conduit principle is essentially switched off, which means anything distributed to a non-resident will first and foremost be subject to tax in the trust. And you know, trusts, high rate taxpayer, 36% CGT, 45% income, 20% dividends tax. So
it's quite expensive.
It's quite expensive. So that's where the first little bit of planning comes in.
Yeah.
Is what is going to be the South African tax consequences of making a distribution to a non-resident beneficiary? Let's say taxes were paid in the trust. SARS is happy. Now the individual receives this distribution, but they're now living in a foreign country. That foreign country is going to say, right, you have received a distribution from a foreign trust, i.e. a trust which is offshore from the perspective of that jurisdiction.
Exactly.
We now want to tax that. Very often, as you know, they tax foreign structures quite aggressively if they even recognize those foreign structures as trusts.
Yeah.
They usually tax them quite aggressively. The starting position is usually always assume it's going to be taxable as income, and there might be relief or other treatments on the distribution. But now that country is going to say, right, Kwesi, you've received the distribution. We now want to tax you. And we don't care that the trust in South Africa, that's a completely separate taxpayer, has already paid tax. It's a different taxpayer. So you have this taxpayer mismatch.
Yeah.
Again, double tax treaty, probably not going to provide relief, which means you might be in for another hit of tax with no credit for the tax already paid. So that's probably worst case scenario. Now, we don't want to scare people, but if you don't think about it, you could really land yourself into some hot water and into some pretty steep tax positions. Just one more thing to mention that we often find happening in practice is distributions are vested in beneficiaries, but not necessarily paid out to them.
Yeah.
Creating these quasi-loan accounts. And those loan accounts can also create a lot of problems because some countries will actually see that as a resettlement back into the structure. So not only do you have the beneficiary implication, you might also be making your beneficiary a settler of that structure, yeah, switching on a whole nother set of rules.
Especially if you start looking at the UK.
So yeah,
the UK absolutely scares me at the moment.
Yes.
So I highly recommend for most of my clients to think twice before you either move to the UK or to leave the UK.
Yeah.
Due to the new non-dom regime.
Changes, yes, the FIG regime.
Exactly.
Yeah, the foreign income and gains regime. So, I mean, it's a good point that you make. There's a lot of uncertainty and it's changed multiple times and it's probably is still going to continue to change. But if you are a beneficiary of a structure in South Africa or offshore and you move to a new country, you have to get tax advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the big things that through this podcast and the series, we try to educate our viewers to say, listen, there's a lot of complex things. And like you said, when it comes to tax, it's most probably complex. So there's things that you really need to consider and it's in the detail. And a lot of times we actually from South Africa, although we are quite experienced and specialized in what we know, but we also have to reach out specifically to the change in the UK rules and to certain US rules that we actually have to reach out to specialists that side as well to say, listen, help us to understand this precisely effectively for the planning process before you get on the plane.
And a lot of people also focus on tax planning, but there are some softer, very important issues, especially for high net worth individuals where there's significant wealth accumulated in a structure. For example, a trust will act as asset protection in the case of divorce in terms of South African law. But in the UK, if you are a beneficiary of a trust, the UK will include that when making a decision on how assets are going to be distributed when a marriage comes to an end. So, you know, if you've got kids living in the UK that are getting married or that Australia is another terrible jurisdiction in that regard, if children go through a divorce, your trust assets situated either in South Africa or in an offshore trust may actually be sucked into that divorce settlement and will be taken into account when the courts in those jurisdictions make an award. So it's not just tax. It's also some of the softer issues that you have to be mindful of.
Absolutely. The last question that I quickly want to touch on is what if, well, it's actually a two-part question. So firstly, let's say I've decided I'm exchanging my house for a good day, sir, and I want to come back and visit in South Africa, and I like the summers here. Let's be honest. The UK summer is not a South African summer. So you come for the full summer back to South Africa. You visit the family. You work like a nomad. You sit this side, look at the beach. What is your tax implications in that circumstance? And then I want to roll over the question to say, if you enjoy the summer so much that you actually want to move back to South Africa permanently, What is your position at the end of the day?
So it's quite a question, but let's try and simplify. So let's take your first scenario where you have left South Africa, but you're still spending time here. You're visiting holidays. You have to be careful of the physical presence test in South Africa. So even though your home and your tax residency might be in another country, if you're spending significant amount of time here in South Africa, you might just be pulled back into the tax net. So that is something you do have to be mindful of, your physical presence and the days counting. If you start spending too much time, it might not even just be the physical presence test. It might actually just be that SARS says, no, you were planning on leaving. You said you were leaving, but you've never really left.
Yeah.
You've always been here. They might actually just undo the whole immigration and say, no, sorry, you never actually left and you've been resident the whole time and we're going to tax you on everything from the day that you left. However, if you are genuinely just coming back for holidays, which most of the people do, I mean, they love South Africa. They want to be here. They might still have some friends and families here. So they go, they leave, they've been out for, let's say, 5, 10, 20 years on this side, you know what, actually they've done everything that they've needed to do and they want to leave the country where they're living and come back to South Africa. It's really important, again, that you do some pre-arrival planning. So firstly, there's the exit out of the country. So the reverse of what we've just discussed, basically the exit out of the country where you were resident. And then the pre-arrival planning when you come back into South Africa, because you will get a base cost uplift on the assets when you come back into SA. There's also opportunities if you want some asset protection, if you want assets looked after for the benefit of your family, that you can do what's called drop-off planning, i.e. contributing your assets into structures before coming back to South Africa. And then when you do come back, there's a process again of notifying SARS to say, okay, right, I'm back in the country. I have to get myself not re-registered, because we usually don't actually recommend clients completely deregister. You will just notify them that you have now become tax resident again, and you'll start paying tax on your worldwide income and gain. So that's quite, and we're actually seeing a lot of that at the moment with South Africans that left years ago. And thanks to all the drama happening, well, not thanks to all the drama, but as a result of all the drama happening and the tax changes in the UK, we're seeing a lot of entrepreneurs coming back to South Africa, which is a really positive story for all of us. And we're really pleased to be seeing this.
Absolutely. Because we, as a country, we went through quite a big brain drain the last few years. And what we've experienced is a lot of these professionals, chartered accountants, attorneys, engineers, starting to return back to South Africa in their primes. Yes. So anywhere from early 30s to late 60s, people are returning back to South Africa, which is absolutely fantastic from an economic perspective because they're bringing wealth back into the country.
And that, skills.
And skills.
Knowledge, yes.
Exactly. And that is absolutely incredible for the country to move forward at the end of the day.
Yeah. We've noticed a very similar trend. So we just need to keep building on it.
Absolutely. Liz, before we cut off, can you explain to the viewers how and when can they actually reach out to you and your team? So I know there's some sort of, I don't want to call it prerequisites, but who can actually speak to you guys?
Yeah. So we are always open for anyone to reach out to us. We will actually only engage if you are an Investec client. So we are Investec tax and fiduciary. Yeah. So for Investec clients particularly, they can engage us. But we're always happy. A lot of people just want to reach out, connect with us. We are a team of 14. We're all across the country, Durban, Joburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, Stellenbosch. So you can reach out to us. And if we can't help you, we will put you in touch with service providers. For example, you guys that can then assist and help further. So sometimes it's just that sounding board that's necessary, yes.
Absolutely. Last thing, do you have three takeaways that you can sort of leave on the table that's easy nuggets for people just to remember when they start thinking about exiting South Africa or actually coming back, things to just consider for them before they pull the trigger?
Yeah. Three, okay. Make it real and human. That's the first thing. Don't try and craft something only for tax purposes and think you're going to get a massive benefit, because those days are long gone. So make it real. Have your braai. Get the job. Go and live in the other country. You can come back
visa.
And visit. Get the visa. Make it real and make it human. You cannot underestimate the value of good advice and in time, not after the fact, before. So before you are going, spend the money, get good advice. You know that saying, penny wise, pound foolish?
Absolutely.
If you do your planning and structuring properly, you can end up in a really good situation. And number three, it might not just be for you personally, it might even impact your bigger family. So if you are beneficiary of a structure, that just adds an added layer of complexity. And yeah, if I had to give you three, those are probably it.
Absolutely. I think my three key takeaways is the exit tax is a dry tax. It's something to plan for. Liquidity is a problem.
Yes.
It's something you have to plan for. The second thing is paperwork protects you. Get your ducks in order. Have ready what you need to get in ready. And like you say, plan before you go, but your exit actually starts after you get on the plane.
Yes.
And the last thing is have a consideration for where you're going. Your new country might bite your old structure at the end of the day.
Yes.
And it's very important to make sure you have the right people around your table to assist you from all the different perspectives,
yeah.
an accounting perspective, a tax perspective, an immigration perspective, so that at the end of the day, you as the client are sure that all bases have been covered.
100%.
Awesome. And good. That is a wrap. Thank you very much for joining us today on Advisory Explained. I'm your host. And once again, Liz, thank you so much for joining.
It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you.